Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
I'm Neil Stavem. So glad to have you tuned in. Ted Ross at the controls. Chris is at the phones. And we're here with pretty much regular daylight, I think.
Yeah, today. Finally, yeah. So, it's stable throughout the day today, right?
That's as far as we know. You know, just wait another 99 years, I guess, to see.
But that's anyway. Right, yeah. I heard Colin Smith this morning talking about, you know, how the darker it gets, the brighter the light shines in the darkness. So, yeah. I mean, that was a good word.
I like it. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk today about ideas. You've heard the saying, ideas have consequences. I've heard others say, you know, ideas have consequences and bad ideas are deadly. Mm-hmm. Bad ideas can have lethal consequences. Also came across this quote today. It says, nothing dies harder than a bad idea. We're going to talk about maybe some bad ideas. Maybe not it's bad ideas, but fatal ideas today. But before we get to that, a reaction to the eclipse. It's interesting on what we are fascinated by, isn't it? Think about the thousands of people that, you know, found their way outside someplace to have a look.
So. Right, that are just amazed that the heavens could do this. But if you're a believer, you just are reminded of the Psalms that talk about God designing the heavens this way.
Yeah. Just made me wonder, do events like this cause us to think deeper about maybe why we're here and how it all began and is there meaning in our lives?
Yeah.
Hopefully that's the case. So we're going to find today that there are a lot of world views about those issues and a lot of questions about those very issues. So we're going to get to that. Our guest is going to talk to us today about the secret battle of ideas about God. And as he'll explain, the word battle is used as appropriately chosen. You know, before you go back to school or take a trip to foreign land, you often have to stop at the doctor's office.
And that's right.
You stop for
immunizations.
That's right. You get your shots.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, prepared. Yeah.
So today, think of today's conversations like a visit to the doctor. And before he gives you your shots, you get a summary of what those immunizations are. Those are the pages that you generally throw away,
yeah,
right? As soon as you get out of the doctor's office. Well, we're going to review those pages today and talk about overcoming the outbreak of five fatal worldviews with Dr. Jeff Myers from Summit Ministries over the past 25 years. Jeff Myers has been one of America's most respected authorities on Christian worldview, apologetics, and youth leadership development. He's authored several books and is the president of Summit Ministries, and he holds a Doctor of Philosophy degree and teaches leadership courses through College Plus and Bellhaven University, and we are honored to have him back with us today on Connecting Faith. Dr. Myers, welcome back. Good to have you on.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate you guys giving up your lunch hour to have a conversation.
Sure. We're gonna be eating during the conversation, so we're hoping that you talk a lot. So, no, that's not true. We're good to review the new book that just came out, The Secret Battle of Ideas About God, and the subtitle is Overcoming the Outbreak of Five Fatal Worldviews, and you use that sort of idea of outbreak as a virus spreading across our nation. Talk about that, first of all. How are bad ideas like viruses?
Neil, thank you for the question, and I'm sorry that this conversation takes place over the lunch hour because I don't want to ruin anybody's meal, but there are lots of ways we can be infected. Viruses are different from other kinds of infections. If you get a bacterial infection, you can take some antibacterial medication and you can kill it. But a virus can't be killed because it's not alive to begin with. It's just a bit of genetic code coded by a protein. The cells readily accept it because they're always on the lookout for nutrition. Then it hijacks the cells to reproduce itself, and it makes us sick and it makes us miserable. And I believe ideas do the same thing. We don't bring in ideas fully formed. Nobody becomes a Marxist after reading all of the collected works of Marx and Lenin, for example. They might just pick up a little idea, a little snippet of a political speech here, a meme there, a bumper sticker, things like that, and all of a sudden they end up holding a false worldview. But that worldview is like a virus. It comes into them and it infects them, and then it ends up it ends up in a place where it stops them from finding answers to the biggest life questions everybody in the world is asking, like, am I loved? What is my purpose? Why do I hurt? And so forth. And I think this is a really significant conversation. I'm glad you're willing to have it.
Well, as we start out the show talking about, you know, the statement, ideas have consequences, but the corollary, you know, bad ideas can kill you. Is that really true?
Bad ideas kill people all of the time. If you think back onto the 20th century, the biggest wars we had, the most number of deaths, these were wars about ideas, weren't they? World War II was a war of ideas about Nazi ideology, a war of ideas about Japanese imperialism, a war of ideas about Italian fascism. World War I was also a war of ideas. Potentially hundreds of millions of people were killed by Marxism. That is an idea that was formed in a library by Karl Marx. I mean, it's probably the most complete modernist worldview that there is, and it resulted in the deaths of possibly hundreds of millions of people. So it is quite literally true that ideas have consequences and bad ideas can kill you.
Let me ask you, can we immunize ourselves from the five fatal of worldview viruses, if you will, if we don't know what the viruses are? I know you talk about there's several steps, but to say a bit about that, do we have to understand them before we can protect against them?
Neil, it's a really textured question, and I appreciate your asking it, and it might take me a couple of minutes to explain the answer. But there is not a magic pill. There is not a silver bullet to this. If you get bacteria on your hand, you can squirt some lotion on there, make them die. But with a virus, you have to be more intentional. There's not just an easy way to handle this. So here's what you do. There are four things. In fact, I studied the outbreak of seriously deadly viruses that have killed people around the world and found that these critical care doctors do four things. The first thing is they identify the bad viruses. They identify what it is. Every virus has certain characteristics. It interacts with the body in a certain way. Ebola, for example, is extremely deadly. One reason Ebola is deadly is because it's mutated. That doesn't mean it's become more complex. It's actually become less complex. It's lost the little markers that the immune system uses to identify the presence of a virus. So it reproduces in secret, and when it bursts into the bloodstream, it's almost too late for the body to be able to respond to it. So we have to think of ideas as viruses in that way, and you have to identify what the bad one is. Second, you have to isolate what is bad about it. And this is where I really want to draw people's attention to our website, secretbattlebook.com. Because there's a worldview checkup there where you can see which ideas have been influencing you. You may not be happy with the results, but tens of thousands of people have taken this survey at secretbattlebook.com, and the results are extremely revealing about the ideas that are influential in the world. You have to identify it. You have to isolate what is bad about it. Third, you have to inform people. We need to know what these bad ideas are so we can appreciate what is true about what Jesus says. And then finally, we invest in people. If your coworker gets a cold, you know, you don't scorn them, mock them for that. I mean, you might a little bit, but you don't have scorn toward them because they didn't choose to get the virus. They don't want it. What you do is help them, help their body fight back against it. That's how you kill viruses in the physical world, and I believe that's also how we tackle the bad ideas that are afflicting us.
We're going to go through several of them because you set aside, as the subtitle says, five fatal worldviews. And so we'll review those as we go along. I'm just curious to know, maybe before we do that, do bad ideas spread kind of the same way? Do they mutate so we don't even necessarily know what they are until it's almost, quote unquote, too late?
I think so. I'll give you Marxism as an example, and I know people kind of roll their eyes when they hear me talk about this, but I'm going to do it anyway. The Marxist worldview, a lot of people say, well, isn't that a dead worldview? But the truth is, it keeps popping up. It pops up in American politics all of the time, and one out of five people in the world live in a country that is ruled by Marxists. So that's not nothing, one out of five people in the world. But this worldview, it presents itself as being the cure to poverty. Poor people are oppressed, and this is the solution. If we do this, then we will be able to find utopia. But Marxism sneaks in a bad idea in the process, and the bad idea it sneaks in is called materialism. It doesn't just mean having lots of stuff, materialism is the term philosophers use to describe the idea that only the material world exists. That's fundamental to the Marxist worldview. So out of concern for the poor, it sneaks in the idea that there is no God, there is no Jesus, there's no Holy Spirit, there's no heaven, there's no hell, only the material world exists. And if there, only the material world exists, then everything on this planet should be shared equally. And if somebody has more than somebody else, it's because they've taken more than their fair share. And that person and the system that allowed them to get that must be overthrown. The Marxist worldview sneaks an awful lot of stuff in on the idea that it cares about the poor. You know, and that's why this is easy to respond to from a Christian viewpoint. God cares very much about poor people, but he also cares that we understand we are made in his image. He's the creator. We can be creative. He is relationship. We can be relational. And true wealth and true success in every area of life comes about through ideas, through good ideas, not just through what's in the minds in the ground, but what's in our minds that God has created.
The book reminds us a virus has been spreading across our nation, and chances are we've already been infected without even realizing it, and the virus is made up of dangerous ideas, worldviews that don't reflect Jesus and biblical living. But there is hope. We're going to talk about the secret battle of ideas about God, and the subtitle of the book is Overcoming the Outbreak of Five Fatal Worldviews. In the moments ahead, we'll review some of those five worldviews. We've talked just a little bit about Marxism, but there's four others we want to address as well, and get some practical steps for us to apply biblical thinking in today's world with Dr. Jeff Myers. Jeff is a respected authority on Christian worldview, apologetics, and youth leadership development. He's author of several books and the president of Summit Ministries. And we're thankful to have an opportunity to connect with him again. We'll talk a little bit about Summit as well coming up. And we do have some copies of the new book, a couple of copies to give away. This is a wonderful resource. It'll help you and equip you and someone, something that you can pass on maybe to your young adults as they are facing these challenges and worlviews in their friends and co-workers or classmates. So sign up for a copy today at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. And if you have a question for Jeff Myers, you can join us with that as well here on Connecting Faith. There's more coming up in just a moment. Talking about the fight for ideas, at least ideas about God. And there is a battle underway. You may not even be aware of it, maybe not equipped for the battle. Today's program will help you be more effectively equipped on how to understand fatal worldviews. The subtitle of Jeff Myers' new book is Overcoming the Outbreak of Five Fatal Worldviews. The title of his book is The Secret Battle of Ideas About God. And if you go to their website, secretbattlebook.com, you'll find an opportunity to take a little quiz, see how you are doing on your understanding of worldview, and find some other resources there as well. Dr. Jeff Myers is the president of Summit Ministries, a great organization. He's been leading that for 25 years or so and speaks nationally, teaches as well on this very topic. Jeff, we talked about Marxism just a little bit. There are five, idea viruses, if you will, that you address in the book. Why don't you just maybe summarize a couple others, give a little handle on why those that you picked?
Yeah, how about if I give them in order that they are influential among church-going Christians today?
Mm, sure.
First is new spirituality. That says the physical world is an illusion, only the spiritual world exists. So that everything that exists is one thing, and that oneness we call God, therefore everything is God and we are God. That idea is embraced, according to a study we did with the Barna Research Group, that at least some aspects of that idea are embraced by 61% of church-going Christians today. So very influential worldview. But it ends up being influential because it's spiritual, and it, you know, people want to be spiritual. We know we're spiritual. We want to tap into the spiritual. But it says that only the spiritual world exists; that the physical world is an illusion. The second worldview that's really influential among Christians is postmodernism. 54% of church-going Christians in our study say that strongly agree with aspects of the postmodern worldview. Postmodernism looks back on the 20th century and says, okay, so this is supposed to be progress. More people died at the hands of their own governments than in all previous human centuries combined. And the reason people died, postmodernism says, is because somebody claimed they knew the truth and they were willing to kill other people to get their way. So if we just stop claiming that there is such a thing as truth, then everything will be better. That's the postmodern worldview. And then another worldview, very influential, I know this sounds odd, but Islam is deeply influential, more so even than Marxism or secularism among church-going Christians today. The Islamic worldview says that every person who has ever been born was born a Muslim. If you're not Muslim now, it's because you are in rebellion against Allah, and the process of being forced to submit to Allah is called jihad. Most Muslims believe that's a form of self-discipline, but there are people, and they are weaponized today, who believe that they should force others to obey God as the Quran says. It's not that Christians embrace the Quran. It's they embrace that many Christians today, especially millennial young Christians, believe that it's appropriate to use force to make people obey God. And I wonder if they picked that up from their universities, where force is used to make people believe certain things, you know, certain politically correct doctrines. You have to believe it or you get shamed on university campuses. And so they started to believe that maybe Christians should act the same way, make people do what you want them to do.
Powerful review of the world in which we live. I'm interested in, you know, when it comes to taking the metaphor of virus again, like an immunization, we get a little bit of the bad to fight the good. Is that, guess as you reviewed those in terms of the church today, we probably got a little bit of the bad already, maybe a lot of the bad.
I think you're right. I think you always have to be careful with immunizations. Of course, the big trick is how do you introduce a virus into the body in a form that the immune system can recognize and prepare against without it overwhelming the immune system? I think what we have today in the church is people whose immune system is overwhelmed. And if you want to take that test yourself, by the way, anybody who's listening, it's free to do it. You can just go to secretbattlebook.com, click on the worldview checkup, and you can see the ideas that have influenced you. I told the ideas that were influential in the church largely today. I was personally influenced most by a secular worldview, I would say, the idea that God's not relevant to what's happening in the world. That's the one that for much of my life plagued me. So anyway, but yeah, can you immunize against these? And I think the answer is yes. The way you immunize against them is looking at them in the right context. For example, I look at a big question like, why do I hurt? I wrote this book in a time of great personal pain. And as a result of the difficult things that had happened, I had really sunk into a depression. And I wanted to know, why do I hurt? Why is there this pain in my life? And so I looked at the other worldviews. What do they say? Well, the New Spiritualist worldview says pain is not real. Pain is an illusion because the whole physical world is an illusion. You know, that didn't help me. Other worldviews, like the secular worldview, says, well, pain is just the way it is. Richard Dawkins famously said in his book, The Blind Watchmaker, in a world of blind physical forces and genetic replication, some people are going to get hurt, other people are going to get lucky, and there is no rhyme or reason in it, nor any justice. DNA neither knows nor cares. DNA just is, and we dance to its music. So the secular answer to the problem of pain is get over it. It's just that's just the way things are. Well, that didn't help me either. So I saw all the influences of those ideas and couldn't find the answers. But then Jesus says, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. That idea of overcoming is that Jesus, through his death and resurrection, has removed from evil its ability to destroy what is most important about us. And just like the dawning of a new day, his hope is coming alive in our hearts more and more as we have the mind of Christ. you know, Jesus says, give us this day our daily bread. And listen, Neil, in a time of great personal pain, every day I had to grasp onto that. I remember every single morning meditating on Lamentations 3, 22 and 23 that says, because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his mercies are new every morning and his faithfulness is great. I found myself thinking, Neil, I can't make it another year. I can't imagine going through the rest of my life like this. And it was as if Jesus, through that passage, would say, let's not do the rest of your life. Let's do today. Jesus said, give us this day our daily bread. God's not interested in ending our pain as much as he is interested in growing our dependence on him. And that turned out to be the answer to the question, why do I hurt, when other worldviews simply didn't. So if you get a little bit of those bad ideas in the context of the truth, then you can realize how shallow and insubstantial and anemic and shriveled they really are, and the truth of Jesus shines even brighter.
So given that, we've got a couple of minutes before break. I mean, it does seem like, as you point out so well in the book, the ideas are shallow, anemic, but how do they gain traction? Because we have these deep longings, so are they meeting some needs, or are they just, is it the enemy masquerading as light?
It's a really important question. I've been reflecting on that, and I think the enemy is willing to use anything that cuts against the truth of Jesus. So these worldviews, you know, if one of them rises, Satan's really happy. If another one rises, he's just as happy. He's got no stake in which one rises as long as they cut against the truth of Jesus. So why are these worldviews influential? I think they're influential because this is the way we're trained every day, right? Take the secular worldview, for example. It says, the physical world is all we have. Well, is the physical world important? Yes, it is. You know, there was a saying many years ago about Christians that these people are so heavenly minded, they're no earthly good. And that's a wrong approach. If Christians are like that, we need to recognize, no, God made this creation. We should care very much about it. We should be so heavenly minded that we are of immense earthly good, right?
Yeah.
And so the secular worldview gains traction because we look around and say, hey, look, everything's happening in the world. God must not be showing up. That causes us to see something that is false about the world. And even though it promises answers to the big life questions, it ends up ruining our ability to really get the answers our hearts are seeking.
We're getting some answers to big life, life's big questions as we discuss the secret battle of ideas about God, overcoming the outbreak of five fatal worldviews. Dr. Jeff Myers, my guest today. He is the president of Summit Ministries. He's one of America's most respected authorities on Christian worldview, apologetics, and youth leadership development. He's authored several books. He appears frequently on major media. I would appreciate his insights. He has a doctor of philosophy degree and teaches leadership courses through College Plus and Belhaven University. And you can find out more about the secret battle of ideas about God at his website, secretbattlebook.com. And you can sign up for a couple of copies. We've got some to give away. Great resource, great insight, and we'll talk more with Jeff in a moment. But give us a call and get us in the drawing for the book at 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH. We're going to talk about one of the big issues about peace and the fact that conflict seems so inevitable. Is conflict inevitable? We'll get to that coming up with Dr. Jeff Myers here in Connecting Faith. You know, we all have deep longings, questions that haunt us, perhaps, in life. And where do we find the answers? Of course, the world is full of ideas, and the sad thing is that many are fatal. In fact, without the biblical worldview, we really don't have hope. But the good news is that there is hope. The Secret Battle of Ideas About God, a new book from Dr. Jeff Myers, talking with us today, president of Summit Ministries, addressing worldviews and what they say about life's biggest questions. One of the questions you address, Jeff, is the issue of peace and conflict. And obviously, we've just seen how bad ideas can really lead to terrible consequences just, a few weeks back in Charlottesville. Talk a bit about, is conflict inevitable in the multitude of ideas?
Hmm. Neil, thanks for your question. The sad reality of human life is that we are born into conflict. Chris Hedges is a professor at Princeton University, and he wrote that of 3,400 years of recorded human history, only 268 years have been completely at peace, just 8% of human history. 92% of the world, 92% of all human history is the history of warfare. So it's a legitimate question, can we get along? And it's not just a question we wonder about, you know, happening in other countries. We're wondering about our own neighbors. We're wondering about the major conflicts that we see in our own country at this time that even divide people who sit next to one another at work. And the answer, I started to look for answers in these other worldviews. What do they have to offer? And it turns out they don't have anything substantial to offer, but Jesus does. And this is a teaching that's a really important teaching in Scripture that I hope gets preached about a lot more, because this would be very good in the time in which we live, is the biblical idea of shalom. It's the idea of peace, well-being, prosperity. It gets translated a lot of different ways. But the key to shalom, the key to peace, and Jesus taught it this way, is being a peacemaker, not just a peacekeeper. In other words, you don't do well in the world just by not causing trouble, right? You do well in the world by looking for opportunities to where there is conflict, and you intentionally bring peace to the situation. You can't say that you are interested in peace if you're just interested in the absence of conflict. You have to be interested in the harmony and well-being and prosperity of every person.
Jeff, how do we go about the process of changing, I mean, someone's mind if it's already made up? And, you know, many of these views are entrenched. I mentioned earlier that, you know, nothing dies harder than a bad idea. Are there some steps we can take? Is it identify, isolate, inform, and invest, as you talked about?
Well, the four I's are a critical part of this book, The Secret Battle of Ideas About God. And by the way, if anybody's listening who isn't sure they want to get the book, if you go to the secretbattlebook.com website, you can sign up to get two free chapters, take a look at it, and then you can get the book if you would like to have it. But I think the answer to the question is to recognize that everybody in the world is asking the big questions we're asking. You know, in a really tough time of my life where I was sinking into a depression, I wrote down, am I loved? Is there anybody who loves me for who I am and not just what I can do for them? Why do I hurt? There's pain in the world. Why do we suffer? What is my purpose? If I were to disappear, would anybody even care? Why can't we get along? And then ultimately, what hope is there for the world? Here's the point I would make, guys, is that every single person in the world is asking those five questions. Even if they have rejected the biblical worldview as a possible solution, they're still asking those questions, and they are not finding answers in these other worldviews. That's, I believe, where we start. You don't start by saying, hey, would you like for me to interpret the book of 1 Corinthians for you? You're saying, no, how are you doing in answering these big questions in life? And could we walk alongside one another? On Sunday, I spoke at a church, and a guy came up to me, had three copies of the book he had just bought, and he said, I was listening online, and then when I heard this book was here, he said, I got in the car, and I came over to the church to buy copies for myself and for my kids. He said, we're all struggling to regain our faith. I admired that man because he was willing to fight for his adult children. Think of this as a battle. It really is a battle. And our kids need answers, and we need answers. And this may be an opportunity to say to our neighbors, why don't you come over? There's a video course that goes with this. We're going to watch a 10-minute video and ask questions and see if we can find some answers. It could be an opportunity to share our faith unlike any we've had for a very long time.
Now, you mentioned visiting with someone that was concerned about his kids, and I think probably our solution is we isolate to inoculate our kids. Is that the right idea?
Well, it would be a great idea if it worked, but it doesn't. We can't isolate ourselves in the same way that we think, oh, well, if I keep my child home from school when other children are sick, then they won't get sick. But guess what? They do get sick. These viruses are everywhere. You know, you open a door, you do anything. And so these ideas, in the same way, ideas are ever present. You know, if you go to the grocery store with your child, you may not let them listen to the radio, but they're still looking at the magazines at the checkout counter. They're still hearing the songs that are on the radio. They're still seeing billboards along the way. If we try to escape rather than engage, we're going to find ourselves even more miserable. What we need to do instead is engage, but teaching engagement based on the truth of Jesus. That way we can feel compassion for people who have embraced bad ideas rather than being afraid of them.
Which maybe is a good time to just say a minute about Summit Ministries. I know you do throughout the summer, and a lot of summer training sessions, and say a bit more about that good work.
Well, we can help families. That's the good news. Summit Ministries offers 12-day programs every summer. We've got one going right now. In fact, it's our last one for the summer. But summer 2018 enrollment is open. Students can come 16 to 22 years of age. They can, for 12 days, we put in front of them the world-class leading experts on biblical worldview, on apologetics and economics and all these issues. We help them feel safe. They can ask and get answers to their biggest, deepest life questions. And we're finding that it has an extraordinarily powerful influence on their ability to go off to college or into life being leaders rather than followers. You know, to step across that line from being passive to being active, you know, as they say, from being part of the problem to being part of the solution. And you just go to summit.org and you can find that information. But aspire to that for your kids. If you've got children or grandchildren, why do we have to succumb to the culture in which we live? Why can't we be part of the solution? There isn't any good reason. We at Summit want to help you. So start saving now, planning now, getting signed up for that now. And then let's just walk together. Let's be friends.
Dr. Jeff Myers, president of Summit Ministries, a speaker and teacher and author of a great new book called The Secret Battle of Ideas About God, Overcoming the Outbreak of Five Fatal Worldviews. And one of them we touched on was postmodernism. I was just thinking, you know, is the whole idea of maybe a search for meaning just a postmodern person would say, well, it's just a religious strategy to sort of get me thinking about God. How would you respond to that?
Well, you can imagine why somebody would be really suspicious of any truth claims today, because everybody's claiming to know the truth, and some of these people are just plain crazy, and we know that. So how do you evaluate truth claims? How would you actually know? And I think as Christians, we say, let's go back to Jesus. What did Jesus say? What did Jesus teach about these big life questions? How do we know not only that there is a God, but that God is good? And that he is giving us hope for the world in which we live. I really think that is a big part of the answer. And I can tell you, as I was writing this new book, The Secret Battle of Ideas About God, it inspired me to share my faith in a whole new way. And, I had been a biblical worldview and apologetics guy, written books on it, written an entire worldview library about it. But this inspired me to seek out conversations with other people and to walk alongside of them. I think this is maybe a unique time in our history. The darker things get, the more of the light of one candle really shines bright, and each one of us can be that.
You address the idea of leaning into the fear, and maybe that's a good way for us to kind of wrap up our time, that there is hope, but we need to lean in.
We can lean in because we know the one who secures our future and our present, the one who for all of eternity has had this plan for the world. We don't have to go out and secure Jesus's victory. All we have to do is proclaim the victory that's already been won.
Jeff, one of our callers asked, he said, I've heard that the greatest proponents of Marxism are on our college professors at secular universities. Is that a true statement? Is that where we're finding these worldviews, maybe not just Marxism, but all the others?
I wish I could say, no, it's not a problem. Mm-hmm. It's a very big problem. And in fact, one study done in 2006 asked professors, would you consider yourself to be a radical person? Are you a radical, an activist, a Marxist? And in the social sciences, about 60% of the professors said yes. So it depends on where you go. If you go to health sciences, very few Marxists are going to be influencing or trying to influence. You go to social sciences, yeah, probably 2 out of 3. So you've got to be sure your kids are prepared for that.
A great conversation, as always, Dr. Jeff Myers. He speaks on worldview, Christian worldview, apologetics, youth leadership development, and has written extensively on all those topics. He's president of Summit Ministries, and he's written a brand new book called The Secret Battle of Ideas About God, Overcoming the Outbreak of 5 Fatal Worldviews. And when you read it, you'll learn to identify them, how to isolate, how to inform, and how to invest. Some great insights today. You can find out more about the book. Take a little quiz, see how you're doing in your worldview. SecretBattleBook.com. SecretBattleBook.com. Jeff, good to talk with you again. Blessings to you as you continue to travel and speak and write. We are beneficiaries of it all.
Thank you. I sure appreciate you and your team.
Jeff Myers joining us today here on Connecting Faith. We do have some copies of the book. We'll do that drawing here at the top of the hour. So feel free to sign up for that at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Connecting Faith continues in just a moment. Listening to Connecting Faith, and as we say regularly here on Connecting Faith, we always want to be ready to give an answer for the hope that we have, but that doesn't necessarily just happen without some preparation or intention. And so as we have opportunity, we connect with people like Rick Mattson, who can help us in understanding some better approaches and maybe lessons on how to more effectively share our faith. Rick's an apologetics specialist for University Christian Fellowship. He's served as a staff worker for over 30 years. He's author of Faith is Like Skydiving and Other Memorable Images for Dialogue with Seekers and Skeptics, now serving at Hamline University in St. Paul, Minnesota. Rick, good to see you again.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, we'll talk a little bit about methodology today, and maybe you can just kind of help us what we're going to focus on, because it's really about the transitions, which is maybe where a lot of us get kind of hung up.
Yeah, right? I would say so. People wonder, how do you get from the weather and politics and just local talk about current issues to the gospel? And I think as I've looked back, my own experiences of this and done a lot of training in this area, it seems like the ability to ask good questions of people, it's kind of a lost art in our culture. Even among Christians who talk about being able to ask good questions, they often don't. And then instead of really listening to the other person, they're kind of thinking of what their next question might be or what their response might be. Boy, careful listening to another person, that is a lost craft in our culture. And when people do it, I think they really stand out. And you can get below the surface with another person, I think, more quickly by asking good questions than you can just spewing your beliefs and opinions and values, you know, chattering nonstop.
So the careful listening, what does that really mean? What does that look like, careful listening?
I think that means that I have a natural curiosity about the other person, that I care about them, and I care about the particulars of their lives. I care about their health, their family, their hobbies, their job. There's all sorts of things that make up a person, and when they come to faith, it's those things that are kind of marshaled together, I would say, in the conversion of the heart, mind, and will toward Christ. So that means I have to pay attention to all the particulars of their lives, and I think it shows true love, care, and compassion, Christ's compassion toward other people, to want to know about the particulars of their lives and to ponder those and to really understand that person, so that when I'm sitting with them and I ask a question, I've got two ears, Neil. One is, you know, listening to the Holy Spirit, what's happening here that I can't see, and the other's listening really carefully to this person. And so we have to have kind of dual channels going, you might say, dual receivers. And that's a way that we can really connect with that other person and show them that we're keenly interested in the kind of the depths of their lives.
We probably if we're in tune, we want to be looking for ways to direct that conversation, but maybe we are in too much of a hurry, right? Like, well, when am I going to sort of get to the spiritual
stuff? Exactly, yeah, yeah. And we need patience, and that's where the ear tuned to the Holy Spirit makes a difference, because then we can walk at the Spirit's pace. So we might start off by asking a person just their opinions about things in their own lives and culture and so forth. Hey, how's it going? What have you been up to lately? Just general chit-chat, and then maybe something a little bit deeper. Hey, what are your opinions about politics, about Donald Trump? Of course, no one has an opinion about that, do they? About healthcare, or, you know, what do you think about X that's happening in our culture? So maybe that first outer layer would be opinions. And then maybe you can start to probe a little bit about some of the experiences they've had in the past. You might ask a question, hey, did you grow up in the church? And what was that like? And if they say yes, I'd like to hear about your experience there. I remember I was on a plane one day. I was flying into, I think, East Lansing. That was it. And I was sitting next to a student from Michigan State. He was from a small town in Michigan. He grew up playing hockey. And so we talked about hockey for a bit. That was really fun to talk about. I love talking about sports. And then at some point I said, hey, did your family have a church in that small town in Michigan? And it was just part of the conversation. It was no big deal. It's not like, ooh, ooh, ooh. You know, there was no quotation marks, no big aura, no big brackets around that question. I just asked that question like I asked him, you know, four or five other questions. And he said, yeah, we did go to church for a while, and then I kind of dropped off, you know, in my later teen years. And then I was able to take the conversation kind of to the next step from there. But to, in context, I would say, not totally out of the blue, but in context, to ask a question like that. Or you could ask, hey, do you have any religious background, and is that still important to you? Or, you know, in context, again, do you have a spiritual story? Do you have a spiritual journey? Have you ever felt the presence of God? I know it takes a little bit of courage sometimes to wade into those waters, but in the context of a free-flowing conversation, and if you're showing that you really care and about this person and are listening to them, I think those questions are fair game. Sometimes we're just afraid to go there, and I think that fear is not of God. It's of ourselves or someplace else, perhaps. Yeah. And then if we talk about their opinions and then get into some of their experiences, and then maybe a third layer might be their basic beliefs. You know, do you believe in God? Do you believe in heaven? Do you believe in hell? Do you believe in the power of prayer? Are you a praying person? All those sorts of questions, I think, are fair game within the give and take of relationships, contextual conversation. Again, I'm not just, this isn't the first line of a conversation. This is deep into it, 5, 10, 15 minutes into a conversation. But that's the direction that I'm thinking about as we talk, and I think that's the direction the Holy Spirit is leading.
And when you get to that point, are you willing to just sort of let those answers, their responses, just set there and percolate, or do you want to dig in deeper then? Well, do you wait till they ask you, say, well, how about you? I mean, or do you try and push the agenda, if you will?
It depends what the Holy Spirit is saying. Of course, I don't always get that right. You know, I talk about, sure. Oh, just listen to the Holy Spirit. You'll always hear the Holy Spirit perfectly. That's not the case for me. But I get inklings. I get promptings. I get a sense of direction where this is going. I think that's often from God. But I think the next step then is, okay, we focused on their story. Now what's my story and what's God's story? So that's the outline, Neil. The outline is their story by me asking questions, or me just listening to people love to talk about themselves. You know, you don't even have to ask sometimes. But we start with their story. And then the point number two on the outline is we go to my story and eventually to God's story. So if they ask, great, I'll share. If they don't ask, then I can just ask their permission. Well, could I share a bit about my own spiritual journey or my own coming up through the church and kind of the highs and lows of what that was like, and see if you can relate to that. And then if the person goes, oh, sure, I'd love to hear it, well, then I can tell a bit about that. And then you can gradually move into the biblical story and talk about the person of Christ and what salvation means. And I don't mean to say that there's just a simple formula. You have to really – you have to be flexible. You have to discern. You have to be a detective. We've talked about that before in these segments. You have to be a detective and discern where the other person is at and try to listen to the Spirit to see how far this conversation is going. And you don't want to get beyond the context and beyond the Spirit, but you don't want to fall short either. I think that's the art of witness, is that sweet spot right in there.
Does it differ if, you know, if you're on a plane to East Lansing versus maybe on the golf course with a friend that you've developed a relationship over a 3-month time? And so this is kind of the next step. So can you take the conversation, get deeper, faster?
Sometimes I do. Sometimes I think to myself, gosh, I've got 65 minutes, you know, on this plane flight, and we'll just see where it goes. And I'm going to maybe be a little bit more forthright or a little bit more bold than I might be with a friend that I see once a week at the golf course, for example. Maybe not, but that's the direction that I'm thinking anyway. That's the leaning that I have. And sometimes I say to myself, gosh, what's holding me back right now? Is it fear? Is it fear of rejection? Now, I think there are good things that can hold me back. Just respect for the other person and where they're at in their journey. That might hold me back in a good way. But sometimes I think it's not so much about the other person. It's about me and my issues and my fear of rejection, or my fear of them asking me a question I don't know the answer to, or whatever. So figuring out my motives as I'm sitting with that person on the plane. And if it's fear that's holding me back, then maybe I just need to dive in and trust God and ask a deeper question.
Has that fear ever been validated, or is it most of the time, I mean, when you sort of pushed through past that, did you get somebody to ask a question you didn't know the answer to and say, oh, yeah, I shouldn't have gone there?
Yeah. It's an imperfect art. I will totally admit that. I mean, like, I do this for a living, and I'm trained, but I still mess up. And, you know, we learn from our experiences. I don't want to keep making the same mistake all the time, so the more we share, the more we share. In golf, it's like putting. The more putts you make, the more putts you make. And in witness, the more you share, the more you're in the habit of sharing Christ with another person, the more you get into that habit deeper and deeper, and the better that you get at it. Not that it's all about technique, but I think there is a certain comfort level in these conversations that we develop over time. So the first conversation is a lot of times the hardest, and the fifth is a lot easier, and the tenth is a lot easier, and the hundredth is a lot easier. But even in the hundredth, I don't do it perfectly. I still make little mistakes, and I want to learn from them. And sometimes I ignore warning signs. I ignore the yellow flag that's going off in my head, and I dive in anyway, and I go, oof, I got ahead of myself there. I got ahead of the spirit. I got ahead of where the conversation should have been, and I wasn't as sensitive as I should have been. But, hey, nothing ventured, nothing gained. And so I think it's about all these little risks that we take in the power of the Spirit. Yeah. Hey, can I say one word about a good book on this topic? It's called Reimagining Evangelism. Mm-hmm. It's by Rick Richardson. Rick currently works for the Billy Graham Center for Evangelism at Wheaton College. This is a really fine book about being in these conversations, asking these questions, transitioning to the gospel, understanding where people are coming from, understanding the postmodern context in which we live right now, Reimagining Evangelism. I'd highly recommend it to people.
Rick Matson, my guest again today. We check in with Rick from time to time as we talk how to share our faith, how to do that effectively. Rick is an apologetic specialist for University Christian Fellowship, and he's author of Faith is Like Skydiving, and he travels the country and serves now at Hamline University in St. Paul as his home base. And you can find out more by connecting with him at rickmatsonoutreach.com, rickmatsonoutreach.com. Rick, good to see you again.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you. Hey, sure. Neil, I wanted to mention that I go out in churches a fair amount and just do this basic evangelism training, how to be in conversations with our friends. And there's a little 30-day challenge of being intentionally involved in witness that we can roll out for folks and roll out for churches just to help congregations do the basics. This is nothing fancy. It's just how to talk with people about God. And so if a church wants to get in contact with me, they can do so through the website.
RickMatsonOutreach.com is the place to find Rick, and we'll check in with him again soon here on Connecting Faith. I always appreciate the opportunity to visit with Rick. Hope you find those little visits helpful. RickMatsonOutreach.com is the website. And the earlier conversation we had with Dr. Jeff Myers, the secret battle of ideas about God. I mean, that was a fascinating conversation.
Yeah.
You're going to hear that again, or maybe pass it on to a friend, or one of your kids maybe. Encourage you. All the interviews that we do are shareable. We post them on the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com, so you can just go there and check it out.
Myfaithradio.com. While you're there, go ahead and click on the Support Faith Radio tab, too. We're 3 weeks away from our fall share event here, so I'll be praying about that if you would as well.
Now, maybe you're listening in one of our new FM signals, whether it's in Madison or Waterloo or Hartford or the new 97.5 in the Twin Cities. Glad to know you're standing with us. Again, thanks for your support at myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.